Welcome to Dugout Study Hall, a remedial course in baseball stats and proud member of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. I'm your host and expert layman, Matt Goodwin, and I am joined, as always, by your fake baseball economist, Style Alexander Chase. On this episode, we are joined by Mike Kurland of the SK Playbook Bases Loaded Pod and The Athletic to talk about all things spring training. And, of course, a little bit about April Fool's Day. Tons of great stuff in this one, but before we get to all of that, Mike, how are you doing?
Fantastic, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're our first repeat customer, actually, on Dugout Study Hall. The first person that's come back around like a boomerang. We're psyched to have you. A lot of stuff has changed since last we spoke. We are going to talk about a lot of that, but before we dive in there, Alexander, how are things?
Well, I got to get to bed early tonight because I have to wake up early to get in line to go buy the new Nats merch. So other than that, pretty good. No real complaints.
Talk a little bit more about that Nats merch for people who may not have seen the tweet.
Oh, man. In addition to the Nats putting out their like City Edition or whatever they're calling it,
City Connect, I think, right?
Yeah, whatever. Right? No free.
Oh, sorry,
ads,
sorry. Right? Why, we don't need this the actual a free term ad on this podcast. Why be right?
Yeah. So it's like a cherry blossom themed, gray and pink and stuff, which looks fantastic. I'm really excited about it. Like the cap has like a little bit of like bloom around the W, which is like the Washington Senators old logo. It's great. Also the Wizards put out like a cherry blossom themed uni that they're wearing tonight. It's like way more aggressively pink. It looks really good. Got a great gradient on the shorts. So like, yeah, really good time to be a person who wants to buy sports merch here in DC.
I was gonna say, are you gonna get in line at one and then slide on over to the other, and you're gonna be all decked out in the basketball shorts and the Nationals jersey? Because that's a picture.
Don't threaten you with a good time. My plan is to be a nice boyfriend and drop my girlfriend off at her office, which is like two blocks from Nat Stadium, and then just go get in line.
Does she know that there's an ulterior motive here to your kind gesture? Does she listen to the podcast afterwards?
Yes, no.
And no, right. So what we say here at least is safe.
Yes.
Mike, again, thank you so much for being a part of this. As I was hinting at, there's been some changes since last we spoke. So I want to pick your brain on all this new stuff that you've got going on and give you a chance to kind of shout it out.
Yeah, I don't know where to start either. We were talking about it. It's still surreal to me because you mentioned when you start in this industry, some of the stuff you work towards is working at The Athletic, NBC Sports Edge, Yahoo, CBS, et cetera, you know, these bigger name companies. And fortunately, like, it's still, like I said, it's still surreal and it's weird to me, but yeah, I'm working at The Athletic now, which as a freelance writer, it's still like, that's honestly the dream spot, dream job. It was. Yeah. And I have no intentions of leaving anytime soon. not that I'm thinking about leaving. Like, I'm like, oh no, what am I saying? I'm stumbling over my words. Shocker. But yeah, I'm at The Athletic now. Doing a lot of my lineup stuff there, and among other stuff, you know, it's a lot more deeper looks and like for deeper league stuff. But overall, that's kind of the main thing. Obviously, I'm still doing the spring training lineup stuff that's going on. And this year I have skplaybook.com. I'm co-owning, and we have a Patreon with George Montanez at @Roto_Nino. Him and I, we've been working together since 2019, and we decided to go ahead and take that and just, you know, even though he works at NBC, I work at The Athletic, we're still allowed to do this stuff on the side. And so we have that going on, and we post stuff daily there, and we have a Discord, and it's just, yeah, it's a lot, but it's a labor of love, as I call it.
Yeah, definitely. I was saying this kind of off the air pre-pod, and I know how much you hate hearing nice things, but I'm super happy to see you, you know, kind of just keep doing your thing and have it pay off. It's nice to see good guys, you know, win the day. You don't always see that when it's not a Marvel movie. Spoiler alert for people who haven't seen Marvel movies. It's a good thing. I'm happy for you. I'm really, really happy for you.
No, I'm super appreciative, man. I mean, like I said, it's when I started in 2019, I literally told myself, I just want to do a podcast. I have the Bases Loaded podcast. I should have plugged that too. And I do that once or twice a week now.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to do a podcast. My goal was like, I want to be a podcast. I want to be the next CBS. And then I realized about a year in, that is very difficult to be anything beyond. So like, there's these tier. I look at them like tiers. And the fact that, you know, Pitcher List has made it to that, like, they won the podcast tournament they're opening the first year. I know, because they beat me on their way to doing it. But Pitcher List is like one of the first like homegrown, like that independent podcast that made that jump, and you don't see that, so that's impressive in its own right. But I realized the amount of effort and work it takes. Not that I was never willing to do it, it was just that wasn't realistic of a goal. So I decided to start writing, and I actually told myself I was never going to write, and that's literally what's taken me the farthest in this industry is writing and creating a nifty little tool that, like, the only reason why it's so useful, I think the main reason is because no one else does it. Like, if a major website did this, I wouldn't even be mad, because I would still do my daily write-ups on this stuff. But the fact that no one's tracking these spring training lineups just in one place for people to look for themselves, even, that's where I think was the big draw. And that's kind of where it all started. Like, when I started doing lineup monitoring in 2020, in the shortened season, it kind of just took off from there, because I was doing it as Twitter threads. And then Jeff Erickson gave me my first kind of like big shout out and break. And it kind of just kind of, I was like, well, then this was really good in 2020. How about I do it for spring training? Because there is nobody doing this for spring training in terms of just having it all in place. And now this is where I'm at. So it's like, I got lucky. I fell into a niche that I didn't realize there was a market for, that very few people. And again, it's very hard to find something that very few people are doing. I say very few because I know Jeff Zimmerman does it. I don't know many others that do cover lineups like that. And I welcome it, because it's obviously something people enjoy. So if you can do it in a different angle than I'm doing it, challenge me. It'll make me better. I really do mean that. Like, please.
Because
there should never be one voice in any corner of this industry.
I think especially for the sort of stuff that you're looking at, like, we're gonna be wrong about any takeaway that's based off of such like small and erratic samples as whatever a manager decides to do in the middle of March. So I want to listen to people that I know have the sort of like lightheartedness. When I saw you like first or second day, like posting some like obviously sarcastic, it's time to freak out sort of stuff. I was so genuinely happy to see you back on that and to get in on the nonsense. Cause like everything about spring training, especially this like shortened spring training, is kind of inherently a little nonsensical. And I like what Zimmerman does, which just like wraps it up team by team in this different sort of way, and that mining the news. But like, I definitely feel like there's a different sort of like personal edge and voice from your way of looking at all this that kind of captures the, I'm just doing my best because that's all that can be done, which I feel like gives me a different sort of confidence than when I go say like, you know, like, this might be the case, but who knows? Here's all the data to make the choice yourself. This seems sticky. They've definitely told us so. I can believe more in this. That sort of like stuff is like a, you know, like, I'm not always a consumer of a lot of different work people put out, but I'm always really happy to look at your stuff. So,
I appreciate it. And I did actually transition a little bit, because I realized last year was such a heavy focus on who's batting where. And I realized the big error in that is, you mentioned, it's the middle of March. Like, how much of that's going to truly stick all year? So what I added to it wasn't just monitoring lineups. It was also monitoring, you know, platoons, which I did a little bit last year, but I'm really trying to find the platoons this year. It's just, it's so hard. The Rockies kind of showed their hand today, so, and we can talk about that a little later. But then, like, position battles obviously are important. Fringe roster guys, I'm trying to take a look at who could kind of be like Rami Gonzalez, who came up and just had that. Yeah, who exactly? Just guys like that could just come up and be like a big guy. A guy like a lot is Cooper Hummel for the Diamondbacks, like a no-name prospect who actually showed and flashed some tools last year. He's a guy that could push for DH/fourth outfield at bats, but it's the Diamondbacks, so there's a path to playing time. And the reason why I started thinking about these guys was because of Akil Baddoo and other guys that just kind of flashed in spring but didn't have a clear path at the time, when really there was always a clear path because of the team they were on. And then, of course, the biggest thing, the big addition to the chart was the new position eligibility watch. I have 60 names on there right now. And I decided, I went through every team in lineup. I'm sure I missed some really obscure names, but I went through every team in lineup, found their NFBC, because I know how big NFBC is in the industry, so I kind of use them as the I got the, because Yahoo will have like 15 other, you know, we all know the joke there. It's low-hanging fruit with Yahoo. So I took NFBC, took their eligibility, and then I went and looked at spring training and decided, let's see who's doing what where. And so I took all 60 names I found that were, I thought were relevant between shallow leagues and deep leagues. As shallow as, let's see, Trey Mancini, and as deep as I'll find an obscure name here. 1 second.
Scroll.
Thyro Estrada. Thyro Estrada, Taylor Walls, guys that are like, these are Yanni Hernandez, guys that are super deep formats. So I went through and grabbed a bunch of them, and some of them are sticky. You know, like, for instance, like another obvious layup, Witt Jr., shortstop only, third base, nothing but third base in spring training. Obvious.
Yeah.
But then you have guys like Kevin Smith that, okay, we thought he'd be the third baseman for Oakland. Since he's gone over there, he's played shortstop like four times already. So it's like, okay, that's interesting. Maybe are they trying to find ways to get him involved more often? Or are they looking at ways that, like, maybe they need to work on him and he won't start as a third baseman, even though third base is a fit? So I thought this position eligibility watch was actually something, a good addition, because I'm already looking at the lineups every day. Why not track who's playing where? Franmil Reyes played the outfield a couple times. Mancini's played the outfield three times. The team has already backed him up on that. I'm on a tangent because I'm really good at tangents, but it's just the idea. I just want to stress that. I think that's kind of an important thing. That's so, going back to what you were mentioning, how we don't know much. I think stuff like that can be sticky, though. Mm-hmm. But this is my first year testing that. We'll see. My goal is that I'm going to keep this, and then I'm actually going to start a brand new one, and by the end of the year, see which ones actually followed through. And kind of, because like I actually did a recap piece for The Athletic, my first ever piece was looking at back at last year's chart, which I've since deleted because I feel like I should have probably kept it. Well, I deleted it because I felt like it was irrelevant once I was done covering it. But I recapped, and there was a lot of stuff was sticky. Like obviously Cendric Mullins leading off stuck, Enrique Hernandez led off stuck. There was a lot of IKF wasn't very good in the second half, but at least he got you steals as a catcher and was playing every day. So that was a guy that kind of flashed in those spring training lineups. So there was negatives. Victor Robles obviously flopped. There was a couple others. So it wasn't, like you said, it wasn't 100%, but there was a lot to it that stuck. So this year, a guy, I'm getting way off topic. Sorry. Let's get back.
Fine. No, roll with it.
It's obviously a passion. So I'm obviously.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's why we love having you on. And this is all really good stuff. So if there's more you want to talk about, you can, or we can go back to our outline. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. We can go back to the outline because you have all the stuff on the outline and I'm jumping ahead because it's just like, I'm a natural talker. So you get me in a conversation, I tangent, I just keep going. I'm like, wait. Even I have to realize I have to reel this in, almost put my own host hat on. Like, I realize that there's an outline for a reason. We have other people. I'm the guest, but we have other people here as well. We all have to talk a little bit. And I'm pretty sure I cut off Alexander in the first place anyway. So
it's all right. It's okay. So let's get back to the timeline and go through these next few things rather quickly so that we can get back into the wheelhouse. Because it's funny. There are times where we're kind of doing our thing and going back and forth I'm doing my host thing. And then there are times where I just find myself sitting back and like, I'm listening to a podcast on my drive home. It's like highway hypnosis in my living room. And that's where we were at. And we're going to get back to that nice Zen flow, but, let's move to pass fail. I moved it up to closer to the top because I'm not sure if either of you were aware of this when we sat down to do this and planned recording on a Tuesday night, but this episode is going to release on Friday, which also happens to be April 1st. And so I wanted to get your take on April Fool's Day. Pass, fail, jokes on April Fool's Day for people. Alexander, you want to go first?
So, like, I'm always really scared of what the brands are going to do. That's my big fear, is that we're going to see some really dumb content come from, like, I don't know. I'm just going to throw out the Pittsburgh Pirates. I don't think the Pittsburgh Pirates social media guy is a bad person. Don't take this personally, but they already like did the biggest joke possible in sending down O'Neill Cruz.
Yeah.
So like, what are they going to possibly do to top that? That's my worry about April Fool's.
You're
going
to tell
general.
Us all that they decided to bring him up. Oh, just kidding. How do you feel about it in general though? Like, are you like a pro prank guy or an anti prank guy?
I think it has to be well coordinated and tongue in cheek. I think those are like the two things I need. Like, there's an old pitcher list bit where they just turn the website into like a ranking of pitchers, you know, like that you pour water out of.
Yeah.
That's tongue in cheek, admittedly stupid. I'm here for it. So that's what I look for. Need good form. You need good form.
Sure. Sure. Mike, what's your take on April Fool's Day?
I've just I just never got behind it. Like, I love talking crap to people. Like, I enjoy the banter. I really do. And when I get a chance to do it with friends, coworkers, etc., it's always a good time. I'm always loud, obviously. I love to talk, and I love to just I love jokes. But the actual prank idea, I find it almost like, especially maybe because we've grown up, we're part of that generation that grew up on watching these prank videos, and I always found them super cringy. People going around doing like really uncomfortable things to people, and I now that's what I picture with April Fool's Day, is people doing stuff like that, not the old school like tape around like a faucet where like it sprays and it gets you
right,
like stuff like that's funny. And actually, my coworkers did that to me not so long ago, but with the, and with the shower head the same day, got me both times. For those who don't know, I work 24 hours, so I'm so I shower, I eat, everything at my job. So yeah, so stuff like that's funny. I find those types of jokes funny. Maybe I'm a little older now, don't see the comedic relief in the other stuff, but I don't know. Again, those videos, they stick with me. I think about those times where, like, you just watch people going around like on the internet doing stupid, obscure stuff, and it's just like, I think it ruined it for me for the most part, honestly.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I like the ones that are like the harmless fun. I think the best prank somebody ever played on me, they took like a picture of the desktop on my computer, which had been acting up and was frustrating me, and they made the picture of the desktop the desktop, and then hid the icons, which is a feature that Windows has for some unknown reason. You can hide all the icons, so that I was trying to click on the icons that were just part of the back. It was very clever, but harmless, right? Nobody got hurt. It was good. That was a good one. So I'm not generally a fan. As a middle school teacher, I'm always living slightly in fear of what's going to happen. So we
you're
shall
not
see.
Allowed to get out of the segment without telling us more about that. So
about what?
So what's like the worst, define at your own discretion, like prank that you've been party to at a school then?
I don't want to answer this question because it's not interesting. the true answer is I've been very lucky. I've got to knock on everything that's wood around me right now. The kids are usually pretty chill. They're not going after the grown-ups, really. They might be doing silly things amongst themselves. I think we've had things where, you know, like somebody's printed out a picture of something, you know, pretty mundane stuff. So you know, it's not like the Dennis the Menace kind of thing where, you know, the teachers are, you know, they're putting tacks on the chairs, and I should stop saying this because they're gonna find this and then they're gonna do all this stuff to me. But no, I've been pretty fortunate in my life not to experience any of those really like the nasty side, like you're talking about, Mike, like the punked type stuff. I don't know. I'm not really down for that, but I like the levity. I like the tongue in cheek stuff. So it sounds like we're all in agreement. Anyway, moving right along, I want to come to our numbers of the week segment. And this is going to be fun because it's some of that nonsense that Alexander was talking about in terms of like, hey, let's look at some stuff from spring training that doesn't matter at all. But I went and I looked up some statistics, and I found the top 13. So our number for the week is 1.00. And that is going to be a reference to WHIP. There are 13 starting pitchers based on whatever MLB is using as their criteria to qualify. Again, this is for fun. This isn't we're not making life and death decisions on this. But there's 13 players that have less than a 1 WHIP. As of Tuesday, the 29th of March, there are 13 players with less than a 1.00 WHIP. And I would like for you two to take turns going back and forth, guessing people on this list until one of you misses three times. We can make it less. Will that take too long? Should we do two times?
I think we're going to miss three times way quicker than you think we will. So I'm here for this.
Yeah. I told you, as soon as you sent it to me, I'm like, I have like three names and I'm not even confident in those three names. So, yeah.
So let me just reiterate, this isn't about making either of you look foolish. One of the reasons I actually went with it is because there's not a ton of like shocking names here. There's not any like obscure names here. It's
this is a trap. I don't believe you.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
I'm joking. In all seriousness, though, I didn't take it like you were trying to make us feel dumb, by the way.
Yeah.
I genuinely am not good at trivia. So I always find it fun. And I'm very big on laughing at myself. So I'm expecting to laugh at myself in a fun way because I'm like, I'm not good at trivia. And pictures are the last thing I cover these days. So this is even better. There you go.
Yeah, no, I never get anything Alexander asks me right, so it's okay. We'll be in the same boat together. So you guys want to do like rock, paper, scissors for first, or does it matter?
Let Mike go. I'll let him have the free space.
Okay, so again, top 13. There are, just for funsies, there are another three that have a 1.00 even, but we're not going to incorporate them. It's less
than. That's
less
not good than. Enough.
All less right, than 1.00.
First guess is a guy that I know has been pitching well. We weren't sure what to expect out of him. And he's Paul Sporer's favorite guy, Justin Verlander.
Justin Verlander is number 11 at 0.92. You're in the game. All right, Alexander, give me a name.
That wasn't the free space. The free space is Jacob deGrom. Please tell me he has a whip under one, please.
Jacob deGrom does not appear on this list.
I didn't think he'd pitch enough innings. That was my concern because it's qualified.
In the top 13. I don't know what to be honest, I don't know what MLB is using as their criteria here. I will look his up afterwards, but I'm afraid that if I click off the screen, that I will never get back to it. So sorry, Alexander. That's one strike for you. Family Feud strike sound insert here. All right, Mike, back to you.
Well, remember I said I had three names? DeGrom was one of them. I'm going to go with my third one. Kershaw has been surprisingly decent. I will go with Kershaw.
Kershaw is number 5 on this list at 0.65.
No, not a names.
All right, so Mike, you're in the lead here. Alexander with one strike.
Okay, I will just pick the other Mets starter in Max Scherzer.
Max Scherzer is number 4 at 0.64 on the whip.
For what it's worth, also, DeGrom, 1.00 whip.
Is it 1.00?
Yeah. In his 5 innings. He's got 5 innings.
Yeah, maybe they might have that limiter on here, I guess. I don't know, because Kate Cavalli's here with 6 innings, and he's at 1.00. I don't have DeGrom on this list that I clicked, so.
Yeah, it's fine.
I don't know.
It was wrong.
Maybe MLB.com has not updated for today or something, or adjusted. Maybe they picked that. Who knows? They gave somebody a hit instead of an error. All right. Who are we at? We're back to Mike, right?
Yes. I've been thinking of name. I'm literally thinking in my head, ADP. I'm going to go with Lucas Giolito.
I'm going to go up and down this list just to make sure I do not see Lucas Giolito. I think that is a strike for Mike. So we've got one strike, Mike, one strike, Alexander, and it is to you, Mr. Chase.
I'm going to go with Robbie Ray. I know he was
Robbie
good.
Ray is number 13.
There's no way that worked also.
0.96. He's the last one.
So I realized that was stupid. I'm surprised it worked.
Yep, no, you got in there under the wire. All right, Mike, back to you.
Oh, no.
Are you guys keeping track, like counting cards in Vegas? Are you keeping track of the ones that are already off the list?
I'm just trying to remember names to add to the list right now. Yeah. told you, but this isn't my strength. I had three names for a reason. This is going to be so wrong, but I'm going to say Logan Webb, maybe? That was a last-minute audible, by the way. He wasn't even the name in my head. I was about to come out. So
I love the guess. He was on a different list that I had sorted of like pitcher goodness, but not on this one.
No.
Sorry. So that's two strikes for Mike. Alexander, back to you.
So I do remember seeing a stat not long ago that was like the Giants have given up one earned run among their like core starting pitcher, like 5. So I'm going to pick Carlos Rodon just to like stay on that thought.
Carlos Rodon is number 2 on this
list. I hate you. Okay, so when I said I call last minute audible,
5. When that's I said, who you were going with.
That was my first. I should have gone with my first instinct.
You gotta go with
your like,
gut.
Rodon. I was like, no, Logan Webb. I just like better. So that was the reason.
Yep. There you go. No, Rodon's on the list. He's number 2.45 whip. Oof. I mean, 6 2/3. So, but 0.45. All right, so this could be it right here. Mike, pressure's on.
Well, I'm about to take it off real quick as soon as I think of a name. Oh man, I'm why am I struggling? Like, the names coming to mind I know aren't good. Like Syndergaard, I know that didn't work out. Matt Manning, I know the velo's up, but he's not, obviously. I know he had a bad outing. I don't know if this guy had a bad outing. I know everyone's hyping him up. Mitch Keller
is number 11 on this list. 0.92 whip.
I'm surprised too, Alexander.
Nice. Well done. Well
done. I'm going to continue to follow the leader here. And I'm going to go young, chaotic, not striking anyone out and throwing nearly 100 with Jesus Luzardo.
Jesus Luzardo is number 8 on this list at 0.86.
Can you give us a recap? Like, how many do we have at this point?
I don't know. Keep going. We're going to go until somebody has 3 strikes or we run out of names.
I'm about to have 3 strikes here because this guy, there's no way. The whip can't be that good. I saw the swinging strike rates today, actually.
There are 6 left.
Okay.
This is so wrong. There's no way this is right. But let me, before I go, I want to. I'm just stalling here. Make sure I can think of a last minute name here. Of course, I'm not gonna go with my gut and be wrong, but this can't be right. I think he had a bad outing, so I'm afraid this guy is really wrong. So hold on. I'm sorry. I'm just
no. It's okay. Brain.
Chris Bassett.
I love that guess. I absolutely love that guess. But no, it's wrong. Chris Bassett is not on this list. So that's 3. So this is what I'll do. I'll just go from 13 all the way down to 1. So number 13 is Robbie Ray at 0.96. Verlander is number Verlander and Keller are tied.
Wait, I'm going to cut you off. Technically, yeah, doesn't he have to get this to win, cuz we're tied then. If I went first, he went second. Oh, yep. We're tied.
Okay, I will take that.
No, because he's only got 1 strike though, right? Alex, you've only got 1 strike.
Oh, is that it?
I thought you had so. Even if he misses this.
Never mind. You're right. I was trying to get technicality. No.
You would have been right if you had had the same number of strikes, and I was prepared for that eventuality. I was trying not to rub it in too much, Mike, that he beat you by 2.
Listen, the fact that I even got more than 1, like, right, I'm actually very happy with.
I think you guys did really well with this, especially guessing cold. It's not like there was anything other than just off the top of your head, so... okay, so 13, Robbie Ray, 0.96. Mitch Keller and Verlander are tied for 11th at 0.92. Adam Wainwright is number 10 at 0.90. Patrick Corbin. Corbin.
No, stop
number
it.
Number 9.
No, no, nope. Stop it. No, here's the thing. No. Here's the reason why I'm upset. I audible from Corbin to Bassett.
Oh, no. You did it twice.
Twice. Oh my goodness.
You gotta trust your instincts.
Well, I saw his swinging strike rate today, and I did like a small little tweet, like, over guys who threw 75 pitches, here's the good and here's the bad. And Patrick Corbin was on the good because his swinging strike rate just stood out, like an 18% swinging strike rate through his first 75 pitches. So basically one start or half a start in real life, but it caught my attention. And I'm like, I think he had a bad outing. Maybe he didn't, obviously. Whatever. Anyway.
Yeah. I'm going to give you honorable mention credit for the fact that you had these names in your head at the very least. So Corbin's number 9 at 0.89. Luzardo is 8 at 0.86. Nick Lodolo is number 7 at 0.82. An interesting name that we might dig a little bit more deeply into later on. Yu Darvish, number 6 at 0.71. Clayton Kershaw, number 5, 0.65. Scherzer, number 4 at 0.64. Number 3, and I really want to talk about this name later on, Mackenzie Gore, 0.56. Number 3, 0.56. Number 2 is Carlos Rodon at 0.45. And I actually am surprised neither of you gave me this name, although I don't think you would have come up with the whip, which is 0.14, which it's only 7 innings, but that's still quite a number. And that is Sandy Alcantara, number 1 on this list. So that was fun. Thanks for playing. I know that's sometimes it's tough to do that. And when the pressure's on, it's really hard to think of the name and to kind of pull that out. So some of those names I think are just what they are, you know, like whatever it's we're talking about 7 innings pitched, but some of those names are intriguing because there's more story to them in what they've done so far than just obviously their whip. So I do want to get into the kind of the central theme of this and dig into some more players. But before we do that, we are going to need to take a very small break.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
And we're back. So, Mike, here is the crux of our episode. We have an abbreviated spring training this year. I know that you're paying a lot of attention to what's going on for all the work that you're doing, all that fantastic work that you're doing. What do you think are the things we can learn from what we've seen so far? And does any of it matter?
I think when I was going off on my tangent, some of the stuff that mattered to me, like I said, a lot was focusing on positional eligibility or potential to gain that for fantasy purposes in season, because some players have a clear path to grabbing that, and you can draft them knowing, like, hey, this is going to happen. There are some, like, certainties. Like, Hunter Dozier has pretty much played first base or DH. So you got to think, okay, assuming that he doesn't get replaced by, hey, okay, bad example, because he has a lot of minor league prospects coming up that could push him, but fine. How about we go with go back to our guy, Trevor Story. You know he's gonna be second base. He hasn't played a single game yet, but you know, like, stuff like that. So you could draft him knowing, all right, shortstop eligibility, you're gonna have second base. A guy like I'm trying to remember the other name I want. Oh, Amir Rosario. No, he's not a for sure thing. Never mind. He's just been playing outfield lately. It's weird. There was another name I had top of my head, and then I got thrown off by the whole wrong name here when I picked it. But it just goes back to, like, I'm just rambling on about how I think this matters. If you look at the names, look at the situations, you can see who actually is for sure, like, has that route to getting that. Garrett Cooper is a great name. He's not going to play the outfield this year. They've pretty much said as much over there in Miami. He has strictly played first base or DH in spring training, and you know he's going to play first base and DH with Jesus Aguilar playing first base and DH around him as well. So Garrett Cooper, a guy, deeper formats, obviously, who you know you're drafting as an outfielder, will gain that corner infield eligibility eventually down the line. So just, again, that stuff's worth monitoring. Other than that, some teams, and the reason why I think it can be valuable in terms of spring training lineups is because, sure, a lot of stuff will change. Injuries will occur. Players will hit their way up the lineup. But what I did notice last year is it's not always a guarantee for that to happen. And I mentioned Enrique Hernandez, Cedric Mullins, guys who hit and stuck in their spots, and they've returned value because of that. So guys for me like that this year, Dansby Swanson, but in a negative manner. That team, that Braves team, isn't very injury prone. Eddie Rosario, Ozzie Albies, Matt Olson, Austin Riley, Marcelo Ozuna. I mean, you can feel about him how you feel, but you know what I mean? He's still playing for the team. I mean, like, right. Again, like, or not.
And probably not going to be playing the outfield a whole lot, so probably not going to get hurt as easily as he could.
Yeah, so you have that, because I remember they mentioned when Acuna returns, he's going to be playing the outfield. At least he says, when I'm back, basically, is what he said. So who else is on that team? I was just reading that. Darno. Duvall is another one who doesn't really get hurt. What's his face does. Darno does get hurt, but he's probably going to be hitting at the bottom of the lineup too. So I guess my point being is that Swanson's kind of stuck and buried on this roster. And in his career, if you actually look at his numbers, Swanson has hit better at the sixth spot and the ninth spot than anywhere else. Those are actually the only two spots, I believe, in the lineup in his career he has a WRC plus over 100. So it's a fun little fact. So the problem is you're drafting Swanson for kind of like he compiles stats. You expect him to play throughout the season and move up and down the order. But if this team can stay healthy, Swanson has a hard path up that lineup, and you're taking away at bats from a guy that you kind of need at bats to get the full quality of, like, stats, stat line from. So guys like situations like this, I'm taking and I'm putting a little more something behind in my rankings and in my mind when I go to draft them, because maybe that 20 something home runs turns into like a low 20s. Maybe those 9, 10 stolen bases turn into 7 or 8. And that might not sound like a lot, but then you're still taking away. And then take away the counting stats, the runs and RBI that come down too, because I thought he was going to lead off at one point in the offseason because they didn't sign everybody. Then they signed everybody. Yeah, and now there's like, and they made a trade for Olsen. And so that was like, that's one of those things where it's like that specific situation I have my eyes on and I'm watching real closely because I was really big on Swanson. Now I'm kind of fading him just a little bit and I'm letting other people kind of take him. Again, I already have a share or two. So he's already on a couple rosters, but like that type of stuff is where like some teams like that, I really take away and dive in on and just like, okay, this makes sense. And teams like that show their hands, like the Royals, go look at them. They've been very consistent in the lineups they've trotted out. And Nicky Lopez, maybe people had hopes for him hitting the top of the lineup. It could happen with injury or Witt Jr. underperforms. But realistically, I mean, and luckily the ADP never really got out of hand for Lopez, he's a guy that maybe you were expecting more at bats and now take away those at bats. He can't compile those stolen bases, those runs for you that you might have gone in on. So that's why that's really what the focus is on here, kind of seeing which lineups are most sticky and could last longer than just the opening couple of weeks of the season.
Yeah, I usually like to say that choices are one of the stickiest things. You know, like batter walk rates is like one of the fastest things to like be reliable. And that's all just like someone decides whether or not they're going to swing at certain pitches. And, you know, there are consequences for that. You'll see guys who decide they want to walk also strike out and stuff. These managers choosing whether or not they're going to swing with some of these prospects at the top of their lineup. Wow, that was a comparison.
Yeah, that was a little internal segue there, Alexander.
Yeah. Wow. Anyways, it's similar sort of stuff to a degree, and I think that I think the thing you bring up with Swanson is one of the more immediately readable sort of situations like that. That also has some really obvious kind of takeaways based off of like how the sort of plug my settings in, get a number and draft based off of that sort of things can go awry. So like Swanson is the sort of guy who's going to get projected to play like 150 games or so, because that's just what happens. And those PA projections are going to put him like pretty high up in the lineup. So if you're like, go to Fangraphs, plug in your like OPS and half steals and runs, but only on Tuesdays league settings or whatever it is. You know, he's going to be the sort of guy that comes out way ahead because of all of those PAs from all those games played. But like when you start fading him down the lineup, those the effects, I think, really on like runs scored are going to be really dramatic, I think, because he's the sort of guy that you like kind of draft for that purpose. And then, you know, if the guys behind him are less good, worse things happen. Now, an interesting thing that I have noticed from guys who tend to hit like sixth or seventh or so, I think Kyle Tucker is the guy that makes me think of this, is if you're in that situation, instead of leading off, a lot of what could be like just flyouts have the potential to be sack flies that don't hurt your batting average, because batting average is a stupid statistic. So let's hope that like five would be flyouts suddenly become sack flies and his batting average is better or something. You know, take the tiny bit of solace you can.
Well, I think an important point here is when you're drafting and somebody like Dansby Swanson is sitting at a certain spot in your ranks or the, you know, the room, let's say maybe you just use kind of whatever the room says. There are other people around him that are going to be similarly ranked that maybe you don't choose because you think Swanson's going to put up numbers that because of these situations and these choices, he's less likely to put up and he deserves to be grouped with other people. So this is something I've been talking about a lot, and that's the opportunity cost of taking him where he's going, because if you're not getting that production, then his value isn't in that space. So not only are it's not just like, okay, well, I'll take him anyway. I need a shortstop and it's a few of this and a few of that. But really, it's also the stats from whoever you didn't take that you're not getting, because you can get those same numbers that you're going to get from Swanson from somebody else later on. So I think it's important to not only look at these players in a vacuum, but also contextually with whatever other decision you would or could make around that particular player with a more accurate projection of what might happen.
Yeah, I think it's really good to know when, like, especially this time of year where it's lovely to just imagine what could be, for which guys the ceiling is being lowered just a little bit at a time. So Yeah, I think that's a really good call out with Swanson. It was a really good one. Now, I know that sometimes things aren't as obviously applicable. I remember actually the comment where I think I was bugging you on Twitter was like a Twins lineup before they signed Correa or something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of chaos and a lot of, you know, caused chaos. I'm going to put Correa in a different category, I think, but like, you know, trying to read the room on whether or not, like,
on day two of spring training, yeah.
Yeah. Like, who is Isaiah Connor Falefa going to take playing time away from in Minneapolis? Like, that was a fun moment.
all of 30 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Although, but now we can talk about the Yankees, because you look at that, and roster resource, I mean, you can hate them or love them. Look at what they have. I kind of agree. I mean, I do expect them to kind of rotate guys in and keep them healthy, because this is just a segue to the Yankees, because IKF is there. He's going to play shortstop, and that's one thing you can take away from these lineups. They played Gleyber Torres there once, and he was the only other starter they've even touched in terms of putting him at shortstop this spring training. So that goes to show, and I think Boone already came out and said that Gleyber is pretty much the backup shortstop. And Gleyber's having a great spring training, so where's DJ going to play every day? If with a healthy Yankees lineup, DJ might play 5 days a week, but it's because he's going to bounce around from third base to second base to first base from third base. He's going to do the carousel thing until there's an injury, which there will be an injury because it's the Yankees. But it's just one of those things, like, I don't think, and I'm getting so much pushback, and it's not that I'm anti LeMahieu necessarily. I kind of am, actually. I mean, he's dropped my ranks.
Yeah.
But the thing about him is, if he's playing 5 out of 6, he's not a compiler anymore. That's one game a week right there. Okay, yeah. So you take away some of his games. Again, this could be easily fixed with a trade, which hasn't come. I doubt it's going to come at this point. Or just it's going to be easily fixed with an injury. But how are we sure that maybe now he played through an injury last year? Are we sure LeMahieu isn't possibly heading towards that? I mean, what is he, 33? So it's not like he suddenly – there is that cliff that happens to almost every ball player. Are we sure he didn't hit it last year or begin to? I mean, I still buy into the skill set. He's doing well in spring. I think LeMahieu still has another year or two in him because the bat skill is so good. But it's one of those things that you have to consider these things. Now you're taking away a game a week from him, at least to start. And I don't know. Just there's no clear path to everyday at bats. And if he sits, what, 2 out of the first 6 the first week, 2 out of the first 6 in week 3 or 4, it starts adding up. And instead of 155, you get 140. That's a big deal for DJ LeMahieu.
Yeah.
And enjoy trying to start him in weekly formats when you're not sure which games he's going to sit.
Yeah.
I think he's a guy that really comes to mind as the sort of person who just totally screws up a lot of the work that I do, where I kind of assume you are going to replace a certain number of games missed. Like Justin Turner, I think, gets underdrafted everywhere because people think he's going to sit more than he actually did last year. I should know he did not sit that often. I think DJ LeMahieu is going to sit a lot, relatively speaking, compared to other people we consider to be like high end, deserves an 8-figure salary sort of players. and like they're giving him a good amount of money. He's pretty good. But I think the lesson for a lot of these cases is that, like, people are better when they don't play every day. And I think it might be the smart thing for the Yankees to do, to rest someone every day.
A little bit
more than that.
These managers don't care about our fantasy teams.
Exactly. And that includes LeMahieu. So you take, and again, he's a guy that you take away even 5 games. Not that it makes a huge difference. That doesn't sound like a lot, but 5 games is the difference between 10 home runs and 9, the difference between 10 stolen bases and 9. And now 10-10 just sounds better than 9-9 in my head, but it's the point of just, you're taking away a little, you're skimming off the top every little bit. And with him, it just matters that much more. And I think it's less of a, I want to make sure I emphasize that it's less about LeMahieu's skill set being concerned about that. I'm not. It's the fact that I think you hit the nail on the head that the day of the Iron Man is dead. If you go look back at, like, people always want to say, oh, I want 150. I want 150. I looked at just players who played 140 games. You go back almost 10 years. I went year by year on Fangraphs into this because I'm sure there's a more efficient way, but I'm not that smart. So I went year by year on Fangraphs. Look at the leaderboards. And only, I think, the highest amount of players that played 140 games in a season was like 115. So we're talking on average, it was close to like 100, pretty much 100 a year through every regular season for the last 10 years that about 100 players play 140 games. And we draft upwards of 300, 400 players, and your draft champions leagues, your drafting holds 700, 750 players. So it's like, you're over here, like we're over here. Just maybe we should make the new standard, like, in our heads. If you think, hey, give me 140, you know, you're getting a top 100 player in terms of games played almost. That's not a bad deal.
The same is true with innings pitched too, by the way. Yeah. I took a look at that. I put out a Twitter poll, like, what do you consider a solid year from a pitcher? And most people picked 150 as the mark, you know.
Give me 150.
They came to me.
That's different, very, very different than those days of, you know, 200 innings was a real solid year, and a lot of guys, you know, hit 160, 170, 180. There's just not a lot of those guys anymore. So it's all around. It's the changing landscape of baseball that is not necessarily how fantasy leagues, especially the more traditional leagues, are designed. They're not really set up that way. You know, you look at a two catcher league versus a two utility kind of a league. You know, maybe the move needs to be away from more of those positional squeezes and more of those. You know, should we have a first baseman, a second baseman, a third baseman, a shortstop plus the middle infield and corner infield? Or should we just have a couple extra, you know, middle and corners for that flexibility? Because so many people are you know, not reaching those milestones in terms of at-bats. I don't know. That's a bigger conversation for a different podcast. But I think that's where some of this stuff gets really difficult. And the work that you're doing, Mike, is really important, because as baseball changes and evolves and the fantasy game doesn't as much to meet the new way of man, right? Like we still got saves. Saves have evolved significantly in the last few years. We're still doing it. Still stolen bases have changed significantly in the last few years. We're still doing it. Those gaps that kind of show up, that's what you're looking at to fill in. And that's really important work.
Yeah, it's bittersweet, because like some teams are super obvious, and then you have teams like the Brewers that have like 15 players for 9 spots, and that's aggravating, because they could platoon very easily. They have so many options to go either which way, and it's like, but I think now my that's why part of my goal is now is to identify who's most likely to get those opportunities, because they're gonna come via injury, via IL stint, via fantasy, you know, phantom injury, Dodgeritis, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, right.
There's going to be an IL stint for most players most years. So who's going to be like, what fourth outfielders? Well, like, I love Tyrone Taylor. He's going to still, I think even with Kutch, I think even with McCutcheon there, I think Taylor should be the favorite to be the fourth outfielder, because his defense is better. And Tyrone Taylor's a guy that, unfortunately, no path to playing time, but he's a guy you keep on your watch list, because even in limited playing time, Taylor still put up I think it was like 14 home runs and 6 stolen bases and like 250 at bats or plate appearances. Sorry. So it's like I'm not saying extrapolate that, but you know, the skill set is there, and he's having a strong spring as well. You have Lorenzo Cain talking about giving him a bigger role, maybe jokingly. Yeah. It was jokingly in the clubhouse, but he was still saying it, like promoting his own player, his own teammate. So a guy like that, like that's where it's like, I've turned my analysis to not just focusing on who's hitting where, but who has that opportunity. So I make sure I try to incorporate that more. And again, obviously it's an evolving thing, because I'm new to doing this, as much as it's like doing, it's again, it's done well. I'm still trying to still improve it, because, and that's why I'm focusing more on the in season, because obviously things change so rapidly all year. I'm going to be doing a daily article in season covering lineup stuff and relevant news that alters lineups, et cetera, et cetera. But it's just one of those things that you got to keep in mind. Like, yeah, it's good to know what's going to happen going into the season, what can stick, assuming everything goes well. But who's going to end up being the guy that benefits the most when things go awry? Because you never know when something bad's going to happen. Injury, trade, underperformance, you name it, you never know. You got to be ready for that, and that's where, again, I'm trying to incorporate, and maybe next year I'll incorporate it a little more. This year I've been focusing on it, but I don't know if I've put enough of it into my actual public analysis. That's the problem. Like, I know I'm noticing it, but I'm not making enough notes about it for other people to be like, hey, maybe I should pay attention to this guy a little more.
So I'm curious then, because we get excited online, it's our favorite thing to do. what is it you've kind of like watched happen that you're like quite certain like isn't real and doesn't matter, that you're like really wary is going to end up dominating the headlines? You know, it's like a lot of what you've said before is like looking for fire. What are you very confident is smoke at this time of year?
Oh man, smoke.
And not Justin. I don't think he's in any lineup considerations right now.
Although Vogelbach is, which is weird. just thinking of obscure random big corner infielders of sorts. Oh man, the smoke. I honestly have had a hard time. Like, I really wish I had an answer, because it's one of those things where I guess maybe because you're looking for answers so much, it's hard to find the, like, who's lying to you. I just wonder if it's more so on the pitching side than the hitting side, because I feel like offense is very cut and dry. But I feel like all these velocity, like, I think it's always going to be the same stuff. Not necessarily the velocity readings, because we don't know how hot these guns are at some of these stadiums. Well, but it's the pitch mix stuff. Like, people get so amped up about pitch mixes. Yeah. Yeah. And it doesn't mean the pitch is going to work. Like, I love the fact that Heaney's trying to learn a new pitch, because I want Heaney to be a thing. I want to wish it into existence. But yep. It doesn't mean that, that third pitch, that new, I think it was like a sweeper is what they're calling it, because that's what Urias has picked up and Trinan.
Yeah.
The entire Dodger staff.
Yes, he's trying to learn it, but he's having a hard time figuring out a release point for it, which is, people don't realize, like, a launch angle change isn't simple. Oh, another thing. Okay, fine. Here's more smoke. Players tweaking their mechanics isn't always a good thing. Just like a pitcher right. Adding a pitch. Look at Bellinger. He's tinkering with his batting stance and mechanics again, and he's obviously looking lost at the plate right now. I'm not sure if that's a mix of just not feeling the new swing and tinkering his new stuff, paired with just not seeing the ball well. There's a lot to it. Maybe one's causing the other, but that's just like, so that type of stuff is like, just be mindful that stuff isn't always good. I'd say that's kind of where the smoke comes from. Like, oh, look, they're making changes. This must be a good thing. Not always.
Those guys that have jobs can go out there and say, I'm throwing one pitch today, and I'm going to try and locate it in a bunch of different places. And if it gets hit, I don't care. Right. They can go do that. And there's, why is this guy only throwing one pitch today? Or, you know, this guy's working on getting his slider to be a little bit more effective or controlling it. So he threw it 50% of the time, and his normal usage is more like 22%. Does that mean it? No, at this point, it probably doesn't mean anything. It's not that it can't, it could. There are situations where that is maybe a precursor to some sort of change and choice. But it's hard to know in the moment which of these, it's like time will tell, right? Once the games start to count, you see a little bit more about what mattered and what didn't. And it's more like a hindsight thing at that point. So I think that's important to know too. We do have some players that I want to get to. So I'd like to do this in maybe a slightly rapid fire way. Maybe I bounce between the two of you and you just give me some short feedback on what your thoughts are. Based on, you know, obviously this very small sample size, but also, you know, a little of a prognostication about the future. So, Mike, I'm going to start with you, and I'm going to ask you to talk to me about Joe Adell. What do you think?
Oh, man. So we all know that Adell kind of did his thing towards the end of the year. And I'm looking at his stats as of entering today, I would guess, because I'm looking him up on Baseball Reference. That's what I like to use for spring training stats, because they give you this opponent They give us this opponent quality metric, which a lot of hitters don't necessarily see above an 8, and an 8 is AAA. So okay. I try to find players that are sitting above an 8, because that's as close as you're going to get, because 10 is MLB, and the only guys that have 10s are in terms of the hitting are like guys that have like one or two games, maybe a few at bats, and they happen to start against a starter that day. But Joe Adell is sitting at a 7.3 entering today. That's just above, that's AA basically. So he should be hitting, but that's good because he's hitting what he's supposed to. Joe Adell's putting up a 280 batting average. And I don't know if you guys heard on latest rates and barrels. So a quick plug to, but he said, I guess there was a study that was put out that it's OPS that's actually the stickiest of stats in terms of spring training, I believe. I'm pretty sure it was OPS. And I would hate to quote him if you're wrong, right? Yeah. And right now, Adell's sitting with over 1,000 OPS, 1.041. And Adell has 3 home runs. He stole 3 bases. And that's important to me because that shows intent in spring training.
Right.
And the fact that he stole 3 in games that don't matter and he was allowed to, that's amazing. And he was successful 3 for 3. Couple walks, 6 strikeouts. The strikeouts are always going to be a thing, but in 28 play appearances, 6 strikeouts, very acceptable. So what's encouraging about Adell, wrong sport. What's encouraging about Joe Adell, this isn't QB list. This is this is pitcher list and all that. What's encouraging about Joe Adell is that he's continuing where he left off. He's succeeding against pitching he's supposed to succeed against. And I always find that encouraging, because I know spring training stats don't matter, but I like to think that they might be a little bit, they might matter a little bit when it comes to a player that showed something at the end of the last year after struggling for so long, and he was able to hold on to it in the next season, even though, again, it's not the highest level of opponent. It's still showing that continuation, and I really like to see that in a player. And again, I know it's spring training, but it's still like, if he was batting 180 with 12 strikeouts, I would be like a lot more concerned. Like, oh, Joe Adell's right. not, you know, he obviously didn't pick up where he left off, but it looks like he did. And that kind of gives me reason for optimism moving into 2022.
All right, Alexander, tell me something good about Keston Hiura.
Do you hate me? This is an interesting one. You know, actually, I want
to hate you. It's very well documented that I don't, Alexander.
I know. Yeah, so I've seen some talk about his mechanics changes. I've seen some talk about, like, again, look at big numbers because home run big. Like, that's it. He has 18 plate appearances, and he's struck out 4 times with 1 walk. That's kind of neat. He's got a 7.8 opponent quality. That's okay. Like, yeah, I'm going to need to see a little bit more. And I think that's basically what I'm going to come to with him. I would like to believe, if anything else, though, that he is willing to make changes after, I think, he reunited with like a college or like low minors hitting coach or something like that to like get back to some of his old ways. I like to talk about him as someone who made some aggressive changes to his profile to like tap into more power right as he was coming up. He stopped being the player he was in the low minors when he hit the high minors in terms of choices. So if he's choosing differently, cool. Show us what happens over 50 plate appearances. I guarantee he won't end up on any roster of mine because of who I am. But I would love to be wrong. I'd feel really happy for him if I was wrong.
Yeah. He's such a weird case of everybody's darling that just couldn't put it together. So I'm rooting for him. Mm-hmm. I am. I don't know him personally, and I am just assuming he's a good person, and I'm rooting for him. All right, Mike, Francisco Lindor.
I mean, what's there not to like? I mean, we were hoping, maybe it took him a year to adjust to the big lights of New York. He's having a heck of a spring, but again, spring doesn't really matter. It's just one of those things that you're just encouraged to see that he's going to enter the season kind of like feeling good, you know, maybe the stress is off of him. They've signed other players around him now, you know, Starling Marte, Kana, those types. He showed, you know, glimpses of kind of bouncing back last year towards the second half. So it was, and we know, I feel like the track record is too long to just assume that last year was who he was. I do know that Lindor, he usually has a really good plate discipline. Last year was a little more passive, I believe, which caused more strikeouts, or it was a weird thing. I think there was more passivity to his game. I remember looking into him a little bit, and I'm wondering if maybe, again, it just took some adjusting. And I know the shift can get to him a little bit as well. I don't know. I want to give him a pass. I think the track record is there, and I haven't been out on him, but somehow I've managed to get him on no teams, and that kind of upsets me, because I think what happens is I'm a really big Story and Tim Anderson guy, so I grab those guys earlier usually, and I never felt the need to double tap shortstop that early. That's all that is. So Lindor's a guy that I actually have FOMO on, because you're seeing, again, I don't like overreacting to spring training stats. I want to emphasize that, but it's just one of those things that, okay, cool. He's showing that it's there again. He's obviously in a groove, and sometimes you can enter a season, that groove just follows. And he hit, I know, so I think he hit another home run or two today, right? Like, so he's at like four or five spring training home runs. Doesn't always mean something, but it's just, you like to see him kind of shake the cobwebs off of a down 2021 and kind of try to, like, maybe he won't ever be quite the guy he was in Cleveland, but at least, you know, I feel like there's a happy medium between what he was and where he was what he was in Cleveland and what he was in New York last year. And so we saw it with Machado, with Harper, those guys, the first year of their mega deals, sometimes it just, they come up short of expectations. They bounce back. Now they're first and second rounders again. Lindor can easily fit that mold.
Yeah, I think for him, it's maybe less that he's doing well and more that he's not doing poorly. Is kind of the takeaway there. Alexander, talk to me about Eduardo Rodriguez.
Do you want to guess what his opponent quality is?
No.
Yeah, okay, that's a good answer. Yeah, he's sitting at a 6.6 so far. I'm happy to see that he's pitched 12 innings. That's really it. Yeah, I think for a lot of these guys, like what you said earlier about just getting out there, throwing some innings, he's not a guy that like, so for example, a lot of the guys that I'm paying attention to pitching wise, the thing that I'm looking for is to see if they change something that will affect like their stuff grades. I am not someone who typically cares about those things, but I know that I have to. So like, for example, Cameron Grove at pitching_bot on Twitter has been running all of the StatCast fed data, because you talk about hot like radar guns. We have actual StatCast enabled parks where we can like trust that someone's fastball going 99.5 is doing that. So he's feeding a lot of the stuff into his model. And for a lot of guys, it's coming out really pretty. Erod's not a guy that I'm really all that worried about in any particular way. He's, I think, kind of the epitome of we'll see when the season hits. Like, yeah, I mean, 1.0 whip, 3.75 ERA, a good number of strikeouts against some guys who aren't that great while you're getting wound up. I don't think there's anything to be worried about or to have an opinion about, honestly. And I'm very happy about that. It's a weird thing.
All right. I'm going to actually have you, Alexander, do one more name, and then we're going to wrap up with Mike. So I want you to tell me a little bit about Mackenzie Gore. I think that he's very, very interesting. Talk about a little bit of post-hype here. So, Alexander, what are your thoughts with what we're seeing out of Mackenzie Gore?
I'm going to lead with the opponent quality. It's about a 7. God, I'm just so predictable right now. The thing I care about with Gore is really particular. He walked a lot of people because he didn't have feel for his stuff, basically, last year, I think was kind of the story. He went from a guy who would have, and walks for 9's imperfect, but whatever. Like, on the scale of, like, 2 or so for much of his, like, early minors career, up to 5 last year, and he's walked, like, no one this spring. So, yeah, it's, you gotta whisper, but, like, he's back, maybe? I'm really excited about him, I think, in a much different way. Again, the stuff grades are off the charts again. It's really fun for a lot of these guys who, like, we haven't had those opportunities to, like, check out, like, how flat is their fastball, you know, like, all that sort of stuff. He looks legit. I'm going to see if I can find his stuff grade, because I think it's in here somewhere. But, yeah, he's the sort of guy that I think really stands out, that there is much more than just a, like, oh, he's back, cool guy, let's go for it sort of thing, or the numbers look good. Like, I think we can be pretty confident that he's showing things we should care about.
Yeah. It's encouraging at the very least. Again, short sample, small sample size, I should say, an abbreviated spring, but more the story that he's not doing poorly, I think is nice. And Mike, I want to come back to you for one more hitter. And so there's the list in the notes. You're welcome to pick somebody off of that list, but I also want to give you the chance to talk up somebody that you just want to talk about. So you could go, you can go on script or off script.
I'm going to go off script, because at this point I'm planting my flag, and this is my, this is my, like, guy. I had no intention of making my guy. And there's volatility there, but I'm comping him to, it's almost like this year's Miles Straw, where it's not as exciting, but he's late speed and the speed skill is the main draw. But it's gross, but I'm in on Jorge Mateo. Like,
that's not gross.
I think it's gross because I think, and rightfully so, I'm pretty sure we all gave up on him, and we should have all given up on him. But I'm gonna pull up the splits now, because I'm just being honest here. That wasn't expecting to talk about him. You would think I have memorized, because, dude, I talk about. I think I've written him up in 3 articles already. So in the second half of last year, again, small sample, 121 plate appearances, 3 home runs, 7 stolen bases, a 519 slug, 333 on base. Which, again, he's actually going to bat probably towards the bottom half of that lineup. They've been sitting around 7-ish in that lineup all spring. The Orioles have. I know the fences aren't going to play in his favor, but I'm not drafting him for power. I think he'll get enough power to be a double digit power guy. That's why I said a poor man's Tommy Edman is realistic, actually. Double digit home runs on the low end, but can get you 30 steals and hit. And I think closer to 250-ish. That's where the poor man Tommy Edman comp comes in. But he showed, you know, he was able to strike out just 24.6% of the time in the second half. Mateo did put up a 359 WOBA and 129 WRC plus. Again, small sample in over 121 play appearances in the second half of 2021 for Mateo. However, it's the playing time that has me super in on him. It's the fact that they seem that they're willing to play him pretty much in the middle of the infield. Shortstop's been where they've been putting him. Second base, they also put him in there for a game. He, in 16 play appearances, he's only struck out twice, so the strikeouts haven't been an issue. Walked once. The OPS has been lackluster, 779. Again, poor man Tommy Edman. but he stole base, didn't get caught stealing yet this offseason. Just kind of a guy that for some reason, I don't know, I play in deeper leagues and Mateo's just my guy and I'm planting my flag. I know there was, I know there's some swing and miss there. That's why I mentioned the batting average being lower. But if you're going to give a guy with former prospect pedigree, the speed being so sought after so late in drafts, and he's going to gain, he's only eligible in outfield, and he's a guy that, I think he was the name I was looking for earlier when I said there's a guy for sure going to get new eligibility. Mateo is because the only places they're playing him are shortstop and second base, where he can play the outfield, but they have a loaded outfield in terms of, like, that's like the one position that the Orioles have covered. So there's no reason to think he won't get run. It's pretty much Rougned Odor would be the only person that would take maybe some time from him, or Chris Owings, neither of which should stop them from seeing what they have in Mullins. Mateo. But that's why I think the ceiling is a Edmund-esque type of deal, you know, double, like I mentioned, double digit home runs. He can get 30 stolen bases. We've seen him do more than that in the minors. And like I said, if he can hit like two, give me the, I'll even take 240 considering he's going around pick 300. So, so this,
especially in today's game, right? 240 is not what it used to be.
It's, and hopefully
closer to league average than anything.
I think 244 was league average last year. Actually, I looked it up recently, and that's the thing. It's where you're drafting him. You could build for that. You could build to take the batting average on, and even the lackluster power, knowing you're going to get a guy who should run. And I mean, as long as he can get on base anyway. But again, he's one of those guys that you're drafting, and if he doesn't pan out, you could drop him. So it's like a freebie, like, hey, if I'm right, I'm right. But if I'm wrong, no one's going to get mad at me. So Jorge Mateo, it's like a win-win for me. I was in on Mateo. Oh, I was in on Mateo. No big deal. Like, oh, that's no big deal. So but Mateo's slowly become my guy.
Alexander, final thoughts here on this kind of like spring training takeaways for the, I don't know how many innings of baseball have actually been played for this particular spring training. Where's your head at in terms of this? Is it having on a scale of like 1 to 10, how much of an impact is what you've seen so far having on your maybe draft strategy or hopefulness for a certain player? Kind of wrap up where your head's at with this whole thing.
So, like, I have one draft left, and I think that's our podcast draft in theory. So there's not like a whole lot of opportunity for me to put a whole lot of this into play, other than I think the first TGFBI et cetera fab run is this weekend. So I guess I got to care about that. And we'll see how much money I'm willing to pay for Matt Brash in a league or two. I am really excited about Matt Brash. Everything looks very, very good for him. If you're looking for a, there's my one more guy I would have brought up. But it's like, it's got to be someone who's got that extreme confluence of good circumstance, excellent stuff, excellent opponent quality, so you can believe his excellent results with his good stuff are meaningful. And like, should he win the job, you would care about it. Like, everything there looks really good. And that's the sort of stuff that I'm looking for. Outside of that, like, we're going to learn a whole lot about what actually was all just getting some guys a couple extra PAs at the top of the lineup against good teams, rather than, Jeremy Pena's going to lean off, which Jeremy Pena might lean off. Hedging my bets, though. And I know I have to hedge for a guy like that, because that's the exact sort of case where it's like, I don't want to be wrong, and I'm ready to. So I'm not saying anything.
I've been hesitant to promote that because the fact that we're talking about Jeremy Pena possibly leading off and Kyle Tucker possibly hitting sixth in this lineup or seventh is ridiculous. What scares me about Tucker doing that is that they stuck with that type of deal all through the playoffs. He hit sixth or seventh in the playoffs. But here's the thing. If they want to lead somebody off, why have they not even tried Kyle Tucker in one of these lineups that matter? Like, one of these, what I call the lineups that matter are the ones with all the starters in. Mm-hmm, he's not, Kyle Tucker has not hit above, he's only been in one of them, and he batted seventh, and they put Jeremy Pena leading off. Like, I don't know if I could buy Pena leading off, but I wonder why they haven't even tried Tucker. And maybe, I mean, we still have a week left. If we don't see Tucker up there, I'll be very surprised. I'm still rooting for him, but I'm kind of scared that he's still going to be relegated to that role. But again, Brantley, Jordan, there are ways for him, for Tucker to move up sooner than later via injury alone. But still, why are they, like, after such a great year, why are they not even showing real, like, any, I don't know. They don't seem to care or want to do it.
This is exactly the right note for us to end on, I feel.
Yeah, I'm angry. I'm angry, thanks. Angry,
frustrated, confused.
I feel like I'm the resident willing to talk about the fact that I actually do watch the Astros and care about them slightly. I'm not an Astros fan. I just have a lot of friends who are, et cetera, within the Pitcherless Discord. So when someone has a question about the Astros, I'm like, oh, yeah. No, I've seen the Astros lineups for the past 100 games because I just text them to a friend or something like that. And I know what Dusty Baker does with people who are not currently on Social Security in his lineups. Mm-hmm. And
but that's what I makes know. Pena so curious. That's what makes the Pena thing so curious to me. He's not usually a guy to put so much faith in a young player. And he's over here willing to like show like the possible, even the possibility of leading Pena off blew my mind.
Yeah.
He's got something on him. He's got a dossier or something.
And clearly yeah, funny somebody's picture. Got something on Kyle Tucker. anyways, we will learn about that one. But I do not believe we will be confident enough about that one in terms of lineups until like let's call it April 22nd or so.
I like how let's just approximate it to April 22nd. That's oddly specific.
Two weeks.
Okay.
2 weeks.
Right, because we're starting on the yeah, okay, less weird. Fair enough. Mike, you've been doing this like spring training stuff for a couple of years now. What would you maybe, if you could, I know this is a big ask and I didn't prepare you for this, if you could boil it down to like what's the biggest takeaway for what is happening during spring, what would you say?
Okay, the biggest takeaway, just like from what I do in terms of content, or just from
being adjacent to it for what you're doing. What's the biggest learning, I guess, that you've had about spring training and what again? What's noise and what's not?
I was gonna say ignore the noise because coach speak isn't always coach speak necessarily, but you kind of have to read through it because people are like, oh look. Altuve isn't going to lead off, but if you read the whole quote, like this is a bad example again. I've been full of bad examples tonight. But like people need to learn to read. The thing is, those people just see snippets on Twitter. People just see a beat writer saying this. I talked to a beat writer. I actually commented about something on a beat writer, and then it was about Muncy. Like he's like, oh, Muncy's expected to play opening day. So I was like, oh wow, look, Muncy might play opening day, but I want to see how healthy he is. The beat writer actually responded saying, no, the rest of the quote says he might not. He'll play opening day or be ready by opening day, but he won't be 100%. I'm like, well, that part matters a ton. Why is that not being part of the? So people need to understand, like when you start seeing these things on Twitter, especially, or hearing these things on podcasts. Take a minute and Google it and see if you can find the article, because if you can find the article, a lot of them are free on MLB.com or these other states have their own, like the Miami Herald and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah. Right.
You might be able to find the article that tells you like, hey, this is the full quote, or hey, look, this guy is really tuned into the team and he has this information. Like everybody was so worried about Jorge Soler being part of the whole DH conversation that Cooper and Aguilar are going to be pushed out. I was like, no, I never thought that was going to happen. And luckily I found an article from Craig Mish that wasn't even being circulated on Twitter that he was quote, or somebody actually pointed it out to me on Twitter. Hey, look, Mish says this. And if you're going to believe anybody with the Marlins, it's Craig Mish. So you kind of have to sift through all the stuff that we're just fed via podcast, Twitter, etc., and really go digging, and you'll find more information that way. That's why Mining the News is so great. But there's times where even Zimmerman will put out something for Mining the News, and if you actually go read it, it can be taken a different direction. Like he took it and interpreted it one way, but you can go interpret your own way, and sometimes that's better off. Like last year, I was really in on Melanson. I got talked out of him because of beat reporters. I ended up being right, and I missed out on having him in some of my more important leagues. So it's one of those things. It's like sometimes the beat writers are just giving you their opinion, not even facts. You also have to make sure, is it a quote? Is this a quote from somebody, or is this the beat writer talking? It's obviously it wasn't such a quick answer, but I guess ignore the noise to a point, like kind of do your own homework. You can't just take what's being given to us or said to us as gospel, no matter who's saying it. Me, I'm saying that about my stuff. Sometimes I'm wrong. Go find out why I'm wrong. Tell me why I'm wrong, and so I can fix it too. Please call me out. I'm good with that. Please, always.
I have a dangerous thing I want to say because I know who I'm talking to here. But did you see the tweet about Julio Rodriguez being the center fielder on opening day? That was speculation, right?
Yeah, I think so. But then apparently the person from the radio show is quoting like an actual person who covers the team. So
Feels like telethon.
It is. Well, here's the thing. I'm going to be late to react, so I only have two more drafts coming up. And by then, he's already going to be either we're going to know the news or not by then anyway. But like, I'm in group chats, like, and some of these chats have like some hardcore NFBC players, which doesn't mean they're the best by any means, obviously. But NFBC is very aggressive because of the overall aspect. And heck, even I was like, well, if he's up from day one, I kind of want to put him in that top 120-130 range. But I'm like, wow, that's kind of aggressive considering you're nowhere near drafting him there now. But you kind of have to be aggressive because I think everyone was thinking, oh, he's going to be down a month. They're going to do what they did with Kelnick and just leave him down. So it's like you're already seeing massive swings in the, and then you have people pushing back in the same group. Like, well, look how these prospects usually turn out year one. It's not more likely to miss than hit. And then so it's already an eternal debate, and we haven't even gotten clarity on if it's happening. And people have, and you have to react because drafts are happening this weekend from or all week because the season's already here, and yet things aren't even figured out. So it's really frustrating. You can tell it's like, oh, yeah. I just want to know. So yes, you mentioned it.
Here's the takeaway: it's really frustrating.
Yes.
So if you're feeling that way, you're not alone.
but like I said, there's always an answer. It's just a matter of how far you're willing to dig. I have not tried digging for this one because usually where this is more smoke than fire for me, if going back to smoke and fire, because there's only been one person to kind of come out. I mean, we've seen rumblings of it, but this is the first person's like confirming it. And I'm using air quotes for those who can't, obviously no one's watching me confirming it. So it's, and it's not like a legit source that any of us have ever used for anything else before. So I'm trying not to overreact. I haven't adjusted my rankings to show him higher yet, but in my mind, I'm like, if I draft tomorrow, if I really want to get him on my team, where I have to think ahead, like, where am I taking this guy? So hopefully,
well, it's going
to
circulate. Something like that's going to circulate fast because it's something everybody wants to believe is true, right?
Yes.
And there's
like O'Neill Cruz,
momentum and energy for that as well. And these teams, like we said before, the teams are not playing to help you win your fantasy league. They're playing maybe to win baseball games, and maybe not even that. So again, another aside for another time. Mike, thank you so much for being a part of this episode. If you could just want to shout out again your stuff and let people know where they can find you on Twitter, all that.
Yeah, the main place I was going to say, if you just want to follow all my work, just follow me on Twitter at Mike_Kurland. I'm a little everywhere. I guess it's so much. Like I said, The Athletic, which the skplaybook.com, the Bases Loaded podcast. I know I'm missing something somewhere, but that's okay. Just like I said, follow me on Twitter and I'll direct you to everything I do there.
Twitter's the hub. It's the hub for almost anybody in the industry, right? That's where everything kind of funnels through. So
I'd say so.
If you're not following Mike, you're doing it wrong. I imagine everybody already is. Again, thank you so much for being a part of this. Now that everybody knows where they can find Mike, Alexander, can you let them know where they can find us?
Well, they can find you on Twitter at @TheCorkedMatt. I'm on Twitter at @Chase_rate. And most importantly, you can find our podcast on Twitter at Dugout Study Hall, where you can send us some questions. Please be sure to subscribe to the Pitcherless podcast feed if you haven't done that already. Leave us a good review if you can be so kind. And if you're not already, please consider becoming a PL Plus member so that you can harass us on the PL Discord. And that's it for me.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you next time.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.